accession number 14982. This is Jay Brown, reel 14.
Mr. Brown, reel 14. You were very slowly getting drafts, Mr. Brown. Where were they coming from?
We were getting them from all arts and parts, you see. I think the idea was, if I haven't said this before, they'd learnt a lesson from the First World War. If you belong to Durham, you got a draft from Durham, Northumberland, etc. So if you had a battle, you might have 12 casualties in one street. So I think they'd learnt the lesson. So they gave you... You sometimes got drafts from the Durham Light Infantry, but there again, they were calling them up from all arts and parts into the Durhams. Other regiments were doing the same. Because you did your time with the Durham Light Infantry didn't mean you belonged to Durham. Some had never seen Durham. That sort of thing happened. But we had drafts from, about that time, we got a draft from the South Wales Borders, I think, and such as that. We'd had one from the South Lancs, you know. And at the beginning of the war, we'd had one from the King's Own Scottish Borders. In between times, you might get one for the Durhams, but it might only be 20 strong. Divided among the companies, it was, you know, that's the way it was going on. But anyway, at that time, we had to move back into line. They wanted to pull the New Zealanders out, because they're really good mobile troops, you know, in support of armour. The New Zealanders were highly trained, very good division. So the first position we moved in, we took over from a Maori battalion. Great soldiers, for God almighty. Hygiene, bloody terrible. Stunk to high heaven. I think they're just shit anyway, you know. And we were only there 2 days. We'd known that, we would have just slept away from. But we dug bloody new positions in the lot. Well, a couple of days, and we moved into the line proper. And we took over from a white New Zealand battalion. The positions was pretty good. They were clean and very friendly. And they put you in the picture, you know, sat in the other. But we're very thin on the ground, like, and at that particular time, I mean, I can imagine the line didn't run straight, you know, out there, back here, taking advantage of any strategic ground, such as that, like. Well, where our line came, we had no 9th battalion at the time. It's not mentioned, I think, that had such a hide, and they must have been refitting as well. We had the 6th battalion, supposed to be on our left, but they were round the corner, actually, because where we were, there was a minefield here, and then the turn sharp left. It was down there for a few miles. It was like a valley slope. It was untenable down there. Nobody wanted to be down there, like, you know. There was nothing you could do, defence or anything. And right at the far side, this gap, there was a pretty big ridge went out, and our 69 Brigade was on there, a good brigade, Greenhounds and East Yorks. And the 6th Battalion was not actually behind us, they were on our left, but around the corner. They were doing patrols and everything, just the same as anybody else, you know. And they sat near there.
Where was this position in relation to the line? Was it near the coast or?
Oh, well off the coast, south central sector, opposite the Deer Lanka Depression, you know. And actually, beyond the Grey Howards, 2 or 3 miles from us, I don't think there was anybody. The Katara Depression was there. You say it was impossible for vehicles, and you couldn't really march around, like, you know. And that was a...
Where were the German and Italian positions?
The Germans, they're mostly Italians in front of us at the time, but the Germans had a little habit of strong points, you know, this, that and the other. But I think the nearest point was maybe 1,000 yards, and then their line wavered the same as ours, you know, before we... 2,000 yards there, and this, that, and the other. Each side took advantage of any bits. We were on a forward slope. During the day, you were in trouble if you moved, you know, you got shelled and one thing or another. But anyway, we had this forward slope. The minefield was just from here to the middle of the road, and we could see a hell of a way, like. And first thing in the morning, stand down, you know, you could. You see the Italians shaking the blankets and such as that, like, and they would say us, you know. And this was a peaceful situation, but both sides had observation posts, artillery-wise. by our OP, where the hell he was, I don't know. It could be a nuisance sometime. He decided to send a few shells over these fellas, like, see. Well, they did the same, but they didn't fire the artillery, they were firing the dust, you know. And he...
Is this what you mean by a nuisance? If he fired, he brought fire on you.
Aye, that's right. They're retaliated, simple as that, like. And that's what that's for. And really waste of shells, you know, most of the case. You get odd, make odd casualties and such as that. But he, what he was doing, he would use it, periodically, he would use his 88mm airburst, you know. The burst for 30, 40, 50, 60 feet in the air, and rain shrapnel down. So he didn't only have to dig in, he had to dig under. You see, and get under there, like. And
what was it like digging there? You, you had difficulty, Ghazal.
It wasn't solid rock, but it was mixed like. It was like a rubble, you know. When you go down the soft surface, it was boulders like that, and this, that, and the other. It wasn't very easy digging, pretty hot and all that, but... And there was nothing elaborate about it, you know. It was just a battle position, that's all. You didn't know whether you'd be leaving next day or what. We had a minefield in front of us, and about a few hundred yards back, less than half a mile, but another minefield. In case he broke through us, he had another minefield to contend with. And being thin on the ground, we had a land of a company, Brain Howards. They didn't put them in the line, but they were a reserve company in case there was a breakthrough, which there wasn't a breakthrough, like. But anyway, we got settled in one thing and another, and that was one time when it was, could have been really monotonous, you know, because during the day, if you moved, if for some reason you had to go over to company headquarters, why, you had to run up this slope over the top. You weren't out of range, but you're out of sight there, like. Well, even one bloke going over there, he'd have a go, you know. And we never lost anybody on there, particularly, but he'd bang, 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 you know. Bloody mortars, one thing and nothing. And so during the day, you had to keep your nose down. For what happened, night time was the liveliest time. Patrols, at the break of the monotony, everybody was volunteering for patrols. Didn't matter what patrol it was, they volunteered, you see. But we did two or three fighting patrols and we found nobody to fight. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody had an idea, like, there must be a German column or someone called an Italian column coming out.
Can we just talk about patrols for a few moments? A fighting patrol, what kind of size would it be?
A fighting patrol would be anywhere up to platoon strong, such as that, you know. And, but you went out, you didn't go out in battle order, you went out in skirmishing order, like, you know what I mean? And at night time in the desert, we had... I never found it particularly cold, but people say it gets cold in the desert tonight after the heat of the day. But we had khaki pullover, you know, cardigan, like a pullover, not a cardigan, pullover, like. See? Why, for some reason, you needed done at night, like, it was a bit chilly. But if you went out on a patrol, you put that next to your skin, because it showed up at night for some reason, and you put your khaki drill shirt over the top, like. So you're still warm enough, but you were camouflaged, you blended in.
Did you have to blacken up?
No, I didn't blacken up. We didn't, not there. Why not? You know what I mean? You're already black with a bloody sun. You understand what I mean? Like, and what was mostly reconnaissance patrols, like. And
what was their job? What was the reconnaissance?
Well, to find out, I would say a lot of nights were a waste of bloody time, which was breaking the monotony. But we had a young officer there, he'd come out the guards on a draft horse. Hurst to call him, and it was his life every night, you know. He wanted to be out every night and come around, give everybody the turns. And he'd come over in daylight, regardless of the pop, 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 you know. And he'd say, well, I'm going out tonight, Chad. And he said, you're going with us, like. He didn't ask you, you're going with us, bring one man, and you'd have a supper. Well, we were as good at mines as the sappers were, but that began, you know. It was, but he'd all us. You could work on a compass by the way he was going, you know. Now, the Italians had a funny bloody system going on. They had a forward line that would be there during the day. But at night, he used to pull back to a reserve line, you know. And when he got through his minefield, the forward lines were empty, see? But what he used to do was booby trap them with them, not telemines, but these jumping jack mines. Well, a terrible bloody thing. A bit like a plant pot, like that. They buried about that far off the top. There's a tripwire on that way and that way, a split pin, And anybody unfortunate enough to kick the wire pulls a split pin out, activates the mine. Down goes a plunger, did two jobs like. Ignited the detonator and it set another one away like a jump. The mine jumped maybe as high as that lamp. Only they were full of ball bearings. But if you see anybody hit with a ball bearing with a bit of velocity, Christ, what a terrible thing. And you had to be very careful with them, aye. And now, this Hurst, he was out nearly every night. And you used to get through his mine. There was gaps where we lifted the mines, took the detonators out and put them back in there. And used to mark them why they're with various things and this, that, and the other. They'd give you luminous paint if you want for this side of the minefield way, you know, on the steel things. And but you could mark them anywhere you liked and work, get on a compass van. But we got to know his minefields just as well as we knew ours, you know. You could get there without a compass at night. Just again, he used to inspect the positions way. What the hell we don't, I didn't know. But so one night in particular, where you are as well, you had to get into trouble. You only fought if you're in trouble, you know. You hadn't engaged them. Well, we lay one night, and about the middle of the bloody road there. It was a lovely night, and all the Italians were digging in by the nervous shower, you know. And they're jabbering away, and we were lying. If they'd known we were there, they'd have shit themselves. And one was broke into song. That of it was like an Italian operetta, you know. And he wasn't a bad singer. I was singing in Italian. I just thought, like, if we only had to move in a few yards, and I'd have spoiled his singing voice. But that sort of thing, you know. But this went on, and I'd been out with him about 3 nights previous. It was later on, wasn't before, not long before we had to move into North when the battle started. And he stood on a mine, a telemine, the late German telemines and all, and he was killed, like. And he lives in Dorset now, he's still alive, but he belonged to Carville, Jeff Martin. He was platoon sergeant of 15th Platoon, I think. He was with him. And he stopped with him, like, till he died, like. But the Italians was open up for everything. But nobody would come out, like, you know, I was wanting to get him a bit medical attention, but anyway, he stopped with him till he died, like. Couldn't get the body back. And he's brought his compass back and his watch and all that, like. A fine young fellow of mine, the rest of my life. He's out too often. And those other officers went out, like, you know, that was his aim.
Were there any
others? They used to just come along and say, well, there's a patrol going out for such and such, you'll get briefed later on. Well, you moved, well, it was dusk, did you move back to company headquarters and then probably a little bit farther back, and whoever was taking the patrol out, he briefed you what you were going to do, you know.
So you all knew your jobs and where you were going and what to do?
Oh, you were trained a minute, like, you know. Well, I went out one night, like, there's things happened which not according to the book, you know. If they didn't tell you, well, you've got an excuse, like. There was just a bit farther up, just past B Company, well out. The line must have went back about 1,500, 2,000 yards or something. The Italians had a listening post. I thought that, not that it made any difference. I don't know it made any rich difference. But anyway, they decided they wanted to make sure it was an Italian listening post. What that had to do with anything, I still didn't know. But anyway, we went and went out. There was half a dozen of us that night. And what the hell did they call the young officer? Yeah. I was the sergeant there. Hey. Not Worthington, to know. Christ almighty. Anyway, I went out. Steady away. And it wasn't a brilliant moonlight night, you know, but you could, it's always, for the start, it's always pretty light in the desert. Anyway, one of these blokes must have had a touch of asthma or something. He's coughing. And his cough was he's been doing, like, really, but, it, you know what I mean. So I went right round the back, kept going, hit his mine, the Italian minefield, why, come up. And you scale about every 10 minutes, having a right old coffin about. Oh, sorry for them. And then we come in behind the positions, you know. Well, we had to just find out what was a listening post. That was our orders, like. So just a young officer aided that night. And we had no orders to bring a prisoner back and out. So we did about 10, 15 yards away, chucked a couple of bake-like grenades in. There's no shrapnel, you know. To drop between your legs will kill you with a, you know, but very demoralised, tossed down, and we just went in and, sorry to say, we finished them off, like. Well, the whole Italian army started to open up with a bloody noise. Of course, we were hightailing them back there, and we were the way out of it.
In a situation like that, is it very stressful to, in effect, be amongst enemy troops in the dark, away from your own positions?
Why? There's not a dread, like. I mean, you've got to put it this way, like. I mean, your very first action, like, at the very beginning, there's a certain apprehension, like, can I or can I not, and this, that, and the other. But when you've done one or two, it was, at that particular time, it was a different world, you know. The war, what, we're talking about now, the back end of 1942 coming in. The war started in 1943. We'd had quite a lot of experience, you know. And you, to a manner of speaking, you'd forgot England, you'd forgot your bloody family. You know what I mean? You didn't write every week, you just couldn't, and such, that sort of thing. And it's hard to explain. It was more of a challenge, I think, than out else, you know. Some were built in different orders, you know, this, that, and the other. Some would be very cruel, like, given the license, you know. Say, as regards killing prisoners and such as that. Some would kill them just for the sake, you know. And
did you come across that kind of situation from time to time?
Oh, did I? A few times. There was one story which... He's dead now, I don't know. I'll mention it later on, anyway, because it's part there.
Yourself, when you went out on patrol, did you like patrolling, personally?
I did at that time, got sitting all on the ground for 24 hours a day, God knows how, never really good at all. That was a morale sapper, I would think, like, you say. You met somebody else, like a strange officer or something like that, and they were just the same as us, man. There were some good officers, some wasn't so good, and, you know. But if you did a patrol, next morning they took you back to, you had to get back company headquarters for daylight, 1500, right, they took you back to brigade headquarters, and the brigade intelligence officer, he briefed you, because it had been known on other occasions, it didn't happen with us, mind, there was some officer or other, maybe he wasn't too keen, he'd had a job to do, he took the lads out a few hundred yards and he'd lay down all night and come back. So he questioned them, questioned the lads, you say. But as regards bringing this Italian patrol up, like, they said they'd open fire, like, that, you know, they hadn't really forced that.
It's a difficult thing. You go charging into this post.
Well, you didn't, like... Like, not an American film, you know. You just walk in, like, bang, bang, and you just walk in, like, and out the nose, pop, 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 beep, pop, and there's a few screams and this, that, and the other, and then you just see what's happened, like, you know, that's it. And
you don't feel afterwards, say, I've just killed somebody. You don't feel afterwards, say, I've just killed somebody. It doesn't hit you personally.
Why, no? Like, how can you? I mean, what about the RAF crew, Obama, when he pulls that? There's maybe... He's maybe 300 or 400 casualties down there, men, women, children, a lot. It's war time, you say. I think they, if you're looking at that point of view, they had a worse time than us, because we were killing blokes that were armed to the teeth, and they would kill you if they got the chance, you say. I think it was easy for us that way, mind. I wouldn't like to be in a bomber pilot.
At this moment in time, in the desert, in the positions you were in, you've mentioned one officer who... light patrolling and it lost his life eventually. Were you by now identifying the officers that you felt you could go with and others you were meant to be squeamish about?
Well, the word passed round, you know. No names, no pack drill, but the word passed round. You've had blokes say, yeah, keep off him, sir. He's no good, like, you know. But most of them, I found most of the young officers, we got a tremendous amount of young officers and only lasted one action and got killed, like. But straight out of table, they were brave, you know. They didn't hesitate, see. A lot of them would come if they were green. They would, in the first, they weren't long asserting themselves, like, but they would depend on the platoon sergeant to put them in the picture, you know. Some of them were great blokes. But you get odd ones like an Englishman. They'd all been like him, you know. They're all some good officers. He's a good officer, English. He wasn't the only one. Lewis was a good officer, but... He didn't have the battle experience that he in English had.
Yeah. Is this a kind of a subconscious confidence you've got in them? You just seem to gel, as it were.
Why, you proved yourself, you say. That was it, like under fire, cold, calm, collected, and you know what he was doing? Totally unconcerned, if that's the word. And
were there any NCOs in your group at this time, in your company, that, again, were particularly good at their work, their job, that come to mind?
Well, it's a lot of you to shout a lot, like, but they didn't all, you know, say.
There must have been men who didn't want to go patrolling, you know, others like yourself who would go, others that didn't want to go.
Well, what they did was ask for volunteers, you know, and I always got plenty of volunteers, and there was one or two that just didn't want to know, like, but I thought that particular, we were thin on the ground, you know, it wasn't like asking 50 men who's gone, like. I mean, at one time, before a few more reinforcements come in, I mean, the Nile Delta was full of troops and all, you know, sick, lame, lazy, and a bloody lot. They called the Yanks, were there, the bad chest, that bad this, bad that. It was full down there. I mean, as far as we, well, it was true or not, I read where there was one period of the war that was screaming out for reinforcements, and Churchill, Winston Churchill, was supposed to say, well, he said, we're paying 900,000 men in the Middle East. He said, when we're going to battle in the desert, we're looking to find 90,000. What's the other buggers doing? That's a good question, like, wasn't it? I know there was some in Iraq, I know some here, some there. But that base was full of troops, mind. Aye. I knew one of them myself.
You would see them when you were on leave, for example.
Well, you didn't know. We never got to the base on leave. You only went to Alex and such as that. But you knew they were there. You knew where they were. You met them after the war, all shouting and bawling with the African star up. Never fired a shot off of them. No. And they're bringing... I don't know if I'm front of my story, like. And,
did this make you feel a little bit angry that you were stuck out there and risking your lives and so many that you felt could?
Oh, did you there. got you wondered who was to blame for that, like, you know. But the only thing is, you were a team, as small as you were, you were a team, like, and as you start to have confidence in the army commanders, especially since Montgomery took over and such as that. You had confidence in the other companies, the troops round about you, and all that. And
you've mentioned the Italian soldier, and obviously the picture.
See, I've heard people say the Italians are a load of bloody rubbish and one thing or another, you know. And blokes had never fought them. There were some good Italian troops, you know. The artillery was bloody outstanding, a good artilleryman, and would stick to the last of the artillery. But the thing was, apart from the artillery, the Italians were so badly equipped and they were atrociously led. Oh, my God. From NCOs up to our officers, they were terribly led. You know what I mean? And the bloody tanks was no... They couldn't compete, like, where obviously with ours or the Germans, anything like that. And they shouldn't do in the... Well, I'm not saying on the wrong side. We didn't want them on our side. They shouldn't have been in the war, the Italians, you know. Mussolini led them in. He had dreams of the Germans doing all the fighting and him taking the Mediterranean over, like, you know, the Italian lake and all that. If it's possible, I feel sorry for the Italians. I like the Italians. It's a race of people. I do, I like them. And, I mean, there were thousands of them needlessly killed, mine, in the Western Desert. That, what they had to fight for, I don't know. If I'd been an Italian in that position, I would have thought, what am I doing here? Because these German gets, like, no cousins of ours, like. And
What opinion had you formed of the German as a soldier?
Well, you couldn't take it away from me. He's a good first-class soldier, the vast majority of them. But there's a big but here, you know. And I've discussed this, like. He's got to be a good soldier, no doubt about that. It would be stupid to say anything else. But... the big but, that so many years start, hadn't they? They trained and trained and trained for this. They introduced a new type of warfare, Blitzkrieg, which nobody knew about, including us, what to start off scratch and learn it, you see. He had better weapons, aircraft, he had better everything, better trained men. Consequently, did well. But round about the Battle of Alamein, when we were just starting to get on the power of him, he got beaten. He never won a round after that. Did he know? Never won around. He fought hard, mind. Fought right back into Germany. There's no doubt about it. But if everybody had been level pegging at the very beginning of the war, arms, and even tactics. I mean, fellas like Montgomery, dating from the First World War, there would have been planning for this Second World War. There was thinkers for the future, where the earlier generals, Ironside and them, where they were thinking 1914, 1918. Like you and I wouldn't have done that, not 30 years after.
The weapons, the German weapons particularly, that you were meeting and coming across at this time, which were the ones that particularly worried you, particularly found horrible?
Oh, without a doubt. I think from the infantry point of view, the most outstanding weapon of the war, and it was never been made by our side, was the German 88mm, which you probably know was developed as a heavy anti-aircraft gun. Then they found out why not dual roll, see? And they developed the solid shot, which it could penetrate any tank, like Sherman's, anything. It could penetrate. And, I mean, he won most of his battles with that. He beat Ritchie with that. You see what I mean? If he hadn't been stupid enough to throw his tanks onto that anti-tank screen.
Infantry weapons, were there any outstanding ones that you wished you'd had?
His submachine guns. I mean, the Smizer, he had Mark 1, 2, 3, he was keeping him problems. Some of that telescopic butts and this, that, and the other. But they were all good weapons, they were light for a start. And on top of that, they fired, I think it was 9.2mm ammunition, which was a small slug. Did the same job. You could carry more ammunition. Well, we didn't even have a bloody submachine gun. We had to get the Americans. You know what I mean? The gangster gun, the 5.5, knock on an elephant and such as that. But quite a good weapon, mind. A lot of them at the time were up till, way up to me being wounded and taken prisoner. We hadn't got the Sten gun, but they got the Sten gun. They could knock them for about a couple of bobbits, and but they did the job, you understand. Why couldn't they make one in 1939? But,
I think you were close to the Greeks at this time.
At that time, we had a battalion, the 44th Division had come out. You see, and what had happened just 2 or 3 weeks, a few weeks before, not long, there was the Buffs and the Queens. They moved them onto this ridge, and the 69th Brigade pulled off. Well, the North Sooner got on, and the Italians shoved them off. As good as ever, the desert experience wasn't there, you know what I mean, the know how. So they had to put 69th Brigade back on. Well, in the meantime, we did attack on the flank, like, to help them out, like. But, oh, there was a lot of, found a lot of bodies of these lads out the Buffs and that, being killed, you know. But the Italians wasn't long on getting off when the 69th Brigade hit them one side and we hit them the other, like.
Were you in on that attack?
Aye, we weren't, aye.
What are your memories of it?
Well, the memories, we had a hell of a barrage from the British start. We must have been getting some, you know. But the 69th Brigade was doing the main attack. We were just going on the flank, you know, see, this ridge. But, no time at all. I think 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the Italians was off the bloody ridge. They'd run for the lives, like, you know. There were no competition for determined troops, to be fair. Although I like the Italians, they were, the morale wasn't there, like. But, anyway, get back to the Greeks. On our right of Big Company, there was another battalion of the 44th Division, which hadn't been out long. Kings, was it? What the bloody hell. Anyway, they pulled them out and the Greeks took over, you know. And, the talk about the Greeks, I don't know, like. It's like being at Wembley in a bloody cup final, the noise that's going off all the time, you know. But he showed the Greeks is on the right, the good soldiers and all, like Montgomery didn't think so, mate, but, because he said, I've got rid of them. But patrolling out the first night, they must have went out battalion strong, the bloody noise and the shouting and bawling and this, that and the other, you know. And first morning, we had no patrols out that night, we said, keep in. We stood till next morning, half the buggers was lost. They were in front of our minefield wire, dejected, didn't know where to go, and couldn't, we had to lead them through our minefield. And then the story started to get out about the Greeks were going out, cutting German Italian ears off, and that was the biggest load of bull in very history. They were a nuisance, to be fair, nuisance to us. And then he pulled them back so far, he put somebody else in there. And they stopped in reserve till the night of the, we had to do the breakthrough, and they pulled us out and the Greeks took our positions over. But that's the Battle of Balmain had been on about 6 days then.